Just because you're an athlete doesn't mean you're impervious or immune to having mental health issues. It's an equal opportunity condition.
Oh, yeah.
So we're now seeing individuals who are of this elite status that we put on a pedestal actually being willing to acknowledge and the willingness and the strength to be able to come forward and admit, this is something that I'm struggling with. And we as a society are now being exposed to that.
Hello, hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of Shrinks Chat. I'm Monica Burton.
I'm Annette Ryder, and today we have Dr. Harold Shaninsky back. Thank you, Harold, for being back in our house.
It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you. We are here to talk about elite athletes and mental health. It's a big topic with the Olympics, and Simone Biles is, of course, right at the top of that topic and conversation. And probably internationally right now. So you're the expert. Everyone wants to hear this because to some degree, every parent, every person out there has tried to succeed in some sport and had to balance that out with their mental health issues too. Stress, ability to sleep, all of that stuff.
You know, it's interesting that there has been a rather profound public awareness of this. Mental health has been in sports since the bygone days. We just didn't talk about it, but it was there. So we had players that just didn't show up for whatever reason. They just disappeared, or they had a lingering injury that just didn't seem to resolve. And actually, those were a lot of times mental health issues. And so we have now publicly began to talk about it, which is great. There is also an emphasis in sport to care about the whole person. So for parents with children that are striving to, you know, move up the ladder in competitive sports, you still have to be able to have balance in your life whenever possible. We know that when someone focuses myopically, singular on one topic and only one topic only, we usually find that that's imposed from external. That's not what the natural development would be. And really, cross-training is fantastic. We get overuse and repetitive injuries. We have kids in high school, pitchers that are getting Tommy John surgery and their careers are already over. So what we want to be able to do is acknowledge first off that, you know, 25% of the populace usually can report to having some type of a mental health issue.
Right.
So if there were four of us on here right now, one of us would probably have it.
Right.
And just statistically. And just because you're an athlete doesn't mean you're impervious or immune to having mental health issues. It's an equal opportunity condition.
Oh, yeah.
So we're now seeing individuals who are of this elite status that we put on a pedestal actually being willing to acknowledge and the willingness and the strength to be able to come forward and admit, this is something that I'm struggling with. And we as a society are now being exposed to that. And so some people are totally on board saying, I hope these individuals do get a chance to address it. And then there's other people who are haters who unfortunately get too much of their own identity placed onto these athletes, that somehow the athletes are a reflection of them. And therefore my athlete who is ideal can't have these problems. And so they react poorly, start labeling, and you see them, you hear them online, you read them.
Online. Yeah, you do. As these sports, especially now watching the Olympics, and I've been watching the Olympics for a few years, you know, I see that these times for the swimmers are regularly being decided by 1/100th, right? When is it going to start being measured in the 1/1000th? You know, when are they going to go to the third decimal over? I'm guessing not that far.
Probably not.
And to some degree, mental health might be the intangible kind of unmeasurable quality that makes the difference of, you know, how good do you get to sleep at night before a big serious competition? How much you can work with your brain, not just your body's ability to execute a sporting activity. I'm guessing that's why they come to you. So
I love it. Thank you very much for that nice referral there. the reality is, like, if you've got an auto problem and you're not necessarily the best at fixing cars, you take it to an auto mechanic. If you've got a leak in the faucet, you know, you can't do it yourself, you bring in a plumber. We have a technical and a tactical coach. So how to actually do what you're supposed to do, the proper form, but also strategies. You have a nutritionist that you're working with. You probably have an exercise physiologist. And to work on mental conditioning, that's when you work with a sports psychologist. The curious aspect, the great master the body, the greatest master the mind. At every level of sport, everyone should have around the same level of skill. But it's right. Who is mentally tougher. So at the most elite level, again, we come to that, well, everyone's got about the same level of skill, but mm-hmm. who can be in the moment? Who doesn't dwell on the past? Who doesn't speak negatively to themselves? Who doesn't worry about the future, but stays in the moment? Who can allow themselves to be both excited for the opportunity, but not overwhelmed with the physiology? And so we teach our athletes how to be mentally prepared by having a routine and having developmental skills to respond in a healthy way to be able to shine when the lights are brightest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think what's been interesting, some of the things that I've been thinking about with this topic, you know, elite athletes and our mental health is, you know, one of the things that you brought up is we put them on a pedestal, even our NFL, NHL, MLB, you know, we put these athletes on a pedestal and we think that they can do anything, like they're mm-hmm. Superman. Part of my curiosity is, and I know that Michael Phelps talked about it.
His own, yep.
Caleb Dressel, he mm-hmm. talked about pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, the pressure to succeed and this pressure to be this like elite athlete that is outside pressure. So it's this notion of I've got to take care of my own mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you deal with that? That pressure to be this perfect person, which there's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when Simone Biles stepped up and then Michael Phelps mm-hmm. kind of supported her and talked about, I mean, a lot of people supported her. It's this like the courage to be brave.
Yes.
Say like, hey, I can't do this.
Right. And, she really was caring mm-hmm. for herself. Mm-hmm. And too many individuals are in our society now with social media have been empowered to have a voice of, well, let's just kind of call it opinions. I mean, I might be a little bit more harsh if I let myself go, but you're not walking in their shoes. You know, just imagine, think back to when you were 19 years old. Do you have your act together? and that was just for taking a quiz in school, mm-hmm. asking someone out, applying for a job, not representing your country against the world's best with millions of people. Oh, well, they, you know, they make incredible amounts of money with endorsements and, you know, they shouldn't be in that place if they're in this. Again, you haven't walked in their shoes. So mm-hmm. it's interesting how people can be very judgmental about stuff that they literally don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in society, this is an issue that just naturally happens. So yes, it does happen with the elite athletes. Let me offer up a couple of thoughts for the listeners. And so especially for them, either the athlete or the parent of an athlete right now, the first comment kind of goes on the idea of stress. And both of you, I'm looking forward to seeing your facial reaction when I say this, because as a psychologist, I always get this really interesting reaction. Okay, y'all set?
Mm-hmm.
I pause momentarily. We kind of build the crescendo. All right, here it is. There is no such thing as stress. Bottom line is, what makes you stressed may not necessarily make me stressed. And what makes me stressed may not necessarily make you stressed. The situation is always neutral. I just did a presentation and I was on stage and we had a large audience. And I mm-hmm. asked, what causes you to be stressed? And a woman in the crowd said, public speaking. I said, you mean like kind of like what I'm doing right now? And she said, yes. And I asked her, what does she do for a living? She talked about what it was. I asked her if she knew people at the table. She said she knew them. And we kind of talked briefly. And I said, what are you doing right now? And she giggled and she said, public speaking. I said, yeah. So we know you can, you have the ability,
mm-hmm.
you have the skill set. But what ends up happening is something changes in your perception. So stress, there isn't an innate stress to something. So if I hold a pen up, you know, no one cares I'm holding a pen up. But if it turns out that this is actually a lethal laser and I'm just pointing it, well, now you know, and so now you're ducking away from it. Now, if I'm standing right behind you and pointing it at you, but you don't know that I'm pointing it at you, there is no stress reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So everything then comes down to what I call the three keys to life. So it's a little thing. All right. And the three are perception, self-talk, and behavior. And I'll walk you through that. Perception. Every person has an initial point of view to every situation in their life. It's either positive or negative. Some people say, well, I'm kind of neutral on whatever that point is. And I'll push them and I'll find out that you're probably neutral positive or neutral negative, but on everything in your life. So you might say, well, I was bit by a dog when I was a child, and now I'm terrified of dogs. So my initial perception whenever I see a dog is negative. Could be I'm afraid of flying, even though we know it's the safest form of transportation. And you know, you're on a negative perspective on it. Doing a podcast, some people would say, I'm thinking, oh, positive. The two of you are positive on it. So we have an initial point of view. It's always 100% you. Doesn't mean it's someone else. It's 100% you. And it can be incredibly accurate, or it could just be some monster you create between your ears. So everything starts with your perception. Then that leads to influencing your self-talk. Your self-talk, and this is kind of a cool aspect about this, either confirms a negative or confirms a positive. And you just continue down that path. Or it could challenge a negative or challenge a positive perspective. So you might have been a devil-may-care kind of kid, and now as an adult with responsibilities, you're thinking, I can't do those kind of things anymore. Or as a child, you were afraid of, you didn't like eating spinach, and you've challenged yourself, and it's like, no, it's something really healthy. I'm going to do that. So your self-talk can confirm or challenge your initial point of view, and your self-talk either talks you into or talks you out of whatever it is that then leads to your behavior. And I always like to point this out. Thoughts or feelings do not equal behaviors.
Right.
And in light of that, I always like to say this, and we'll just ask all your listeners, have you ever been angry at someone? And you usually get someone saying, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll ask them, were you ever angry at someone in particular? I go, yeah. I go, did you go up to them and just hit them in the face? And I'm like, no. I go, so you were filled with rage, anger, vengeance. You might have even visualized what you were going to do to that person, but you ultimately control your behavior.
Right.
It's a reality for all of us.
Right, right.
And the curious thing is whatever you practice, whatever behavior you practice, you improve on that. You get better at it. So if you avoid public speaking, you get better at avoiding. If you drink when you're stressed, well, let's see, I'm drink. That's my coping skill. So I have a positive point of view. It's 100% me. It's really counterproductive because it's a central nervous system depressant and I don't address anything. But my self-talk confirms it. I say, yeah, that's the way I cope. It's my social lubricant. I relax a little bit. And my behavior is I continue drinking. So right. You can actually watch how perception, self-talk, and behavior play themselves out. Each one of these athletes, stress is a perception.
Right.
So somewhere along the line, an athlete goes from being in the moment, doing it for the fun, knowing that I possess this greatness, to the gravity of the situation, my perception of this. I feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. I don't want to disappoint or let. Now my perception has changed, which leads to my self-talk, which causes this physiological change. And so you can see that with the most elite athletes. And if you know your listening audience kind of reflects for a second, they think, there's some things I do easily and there's some things I'm a little apprehensive about, or I talk myself out of. And so I hope that just kind of breaking it into that detail helps people understand it starts with one's perception. Over time, you may discover it wasn't as bad, which changes my self-talk, which then changes my perception. And that's the hope when we work with athletes, is to get them in the moment and out of their head.
Boy, and at the level these guys in the Olympics are performing at, their athleticism is sometimes very physically risky.
Absolutely.
Unlike my athleticism, riding a bike or doing my Zumba or my Pilates, it's not really risky. I'm not likely to break my neck or, dislocate bones or things like that, doing any of the exercises I do. So their heads really got to be in the game.
Absolutely.
They're so strong and so well trained that they could actually hurt themselves.
Well, we talk about it when I work with our Paris figure skaters. We talk about you have to get past your fear of falling in order to learn your next element or the next jump.
Right.
If you're used to doing a single jump in the air, and if I asked the entire audience, could you stand up and just jump in the air one full circle around and land facing the same way you started? Most people might say, yeah, kind of. Okay, probably. Can you do two full circles? Not quite. I might call short, might call in long, I don't know. How about three full circles? No, not a chance. The guys are now doing quads.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about how elite athletes actually have to have an advanced pain threshold because there's a lot of bumps and bruises. A 300-pound lineman running into another 300-pound lineman every snap in practice, not just on Sunday.
Right.
The laws of physics would cause a significant impact. A gymnast spinning with the torque and landing. So we have elite athletes have to have not only an advanced pain threshold, but injury is actually a part of being an elite athlete. As you were just saying, the most people in the society wake up, roll out of bed, have a cup of coffee, their cereal, get in the car, drive to work, have lunch, finish work, go home, eat, go to bed. And they still get injured.
Yeah. Thank you, Harold. You have to tell everybody about my life.
Well, it's a curious reality. And now just imagine pushing yourself to your physiological limit. Mm-hmm. So as an athlete, we have to have the mentality that injury is a part of this. I am going to do everything I can proactively, preemptively. I'm going to stretch. I'm going to make sure that my body is in as best shape as possible. I'm going to practice everything working up to it. We're going to do it in a safe way as we build up to it. But I am, in fact, pushing myself to a physiological extreme. So when that does occur, it's not necessarily devastating, but it's a part of the process. And I now can learn from that experience. I can actually get myself now in better shape when I'm actually coming back from any form of injury. So I always tell my athletes, you always complain about not having an off season. Well, you have the time when you're injured and you're going through recovery. Let's look at it as your off season and now get you in better shape than you were pre-injury.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a cool perspective that most people in society never have to deal with. But you're right, with elite athletes, they have to develop that mentality.
Mm-hmm. Harold, have you ever heard of David Goggins or read his
book? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Phenomenal story.
It's wonderful. And very inspirational.
Yep.
When he talks about the first time he ran that 100 miles.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't help.
The ultra marathoners.
Yeah. The ultra marathoners. And okay. So I've only ran a 5K. I've run a 10K before too, but. As I was reading this story of he didn't really even train to run 100 miles. He just kind of went out there. Mm-hmm. And then how throughout the race, his body was physically breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was going to the bathroom in his pants. His kidneys were shutting down. Like,
oh, yeah.
And he kept going. For him, part of his story that I feel is so inspirational is in those defining moments, what are your choices and how it can change you? But watching the Olympics and all this talk about mental health, it really got me thinking about, and some of the critics that I've heard, how do we define like the difference between when a failure has actually helped us really create success, as opposed to a failure has happened or an injury has happened, and then we stop. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, first off, you have to start with what's referred to as a realistic expectation.
Right.
Our happiness is directly correlated to our expectations.
Right.
And if I have an unrealistic expectation, I'm setting myself up for failure. I used the word a little earlier, you have to be perfect.
Yeah.
And yet we all know there is no perfect. So we talk about perfection should be a motivational drive to improve because we all have room for improvement, but perfection should never be used as a criteria to judge yourself by.
Mm-hmm.
If you never lose and if all you do is win, 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 you don't grow. You just keep doing what you do. I actually had an NFL coach that I was working with whose team was undefeated until late into the season. They had already earned a postseason berth. They had home field advantage. And then they ended up playing a losing record team in one of the latter games of the year. The losing record team beat their butts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, as he said, it was during the regular season and they were going to the playoffs. If it would have happened in the playoffs, one and done. They discovered that the opposing team figured out something about their defense And as he says, this coach says, if it wasn't for that loss, they wouldn't have made the changes. And those changes allowed them to actually improve going into the playoffs, which allowed them then to play through the playoffs and win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the loss, they wouldn't have won the Super Bowl.
Right.
And it's kind of a great mentality, a perspective that we have. It's, I always like to say, either you achieve your goal or it's a learning opportunity.
Right.
Most people have a pre-game or pre-shot routine. Or, you know, it could be a pre-study for an exam routine or a preparation when I present to a board of directors, whatever it might be. We usually have that kind of workup routine, the pre. What we found actually with the most elite athletes is that a few seconds after whatever takes place, they just like you and me react. We all react. The goal is how quickly can you respond? Reacting is emotion, responding is cognition. Reacting with emotion, you don't learn from it. So if I hit an ace up the tee of a court, I'm like, yeah, oh, I'm the man. I'm not learning what was it I did to hit the ace. I'm just happy. The problem is if I double fault, I'm like, oh, I stink. I can't believe I just gave away a point. That negative self-talk doesn't teach me anything to benefit from it. As a matter of fact, the negative emotions may linger. Now I start thinking I need to make up for that mistake. So now I start to have to hit harder. My muscles tighten up. My form starts to break down. My consistency falls apart. And the next thing I know, I've just lost everything. So we want to do what's called a post-shot routine. So talking about a loss, if something is not successful, this is where you do the whether it's successful or not, you can do the post-shot routine or the post-play or the post-game routine. You want to move from emotions to cognitions, from feelings to thoughts. And the best way to do that is ask yourself three questions in the post-shot routine. What was the plan? What actually happened? And what do I learn from this?
Right.
You actually move from the limbic region, the emotional cortex, other end, the amygdala, up to higher cortical functioning. It's like getting a private lesson from you to you. Imagine having an exceptional coach working with you every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And so I help athletes not just have a pre-shot routine or a pre-game routine or corporate executives to kind of do their homework and prep ahead of time, but afterwards to ask themselves three questions of the post-shot routine. What was the plan? What actually happened? And what do I learn from it? Once I do that, then I realize loss or not victory is actually something that makes me better. If I may ask you this, all right, here's a fun concept. I'm going to say something quickly. A lot of your listeners are going to go, oh, you better explain this. All right, ready?
Okay.
So when it comes to this type of feedback, I always talk about third person first person second. A lot of people are like, dude, what? Okay. So imagine if you were an athlete, how would a coach that you respect come up to you? And what would they say after whatever took place, whether it was successful or if it was unsuccessful? How would a really good, respectful coach approach you? Just as a question of curiosity.
Okay. We're going to answer it when we get back from our break. Thank you, Harold. Thanks to our sponsors. Listen in, stick with us. We'll be right back with the answers to that great question.
Chosen by leading interventionists, doctors, and therapists, Origins nationally accredited world-renowned addiction treatment programs provide comprehensive care for adults, including those with serious psychiatric and medical disorders. Call 844-502-HOPE to speak confidentially with an expert or visit us at originsrecovery.com to learn more.
Monica Burton is a licensed marriage and family therapist based in St. Petersburg, Florida. With 18 years experience, she offers individual, family, and couples therapy and teletherapy. Now there are two new online video classes, ABCs of Money and Your Relationship and Relationship Cooking. For more, go to monicaburtonlmft.com. That's monicaburtonlmft.com. And check out Monica's YouTube channel. There are new segments every Thursday with great tips and advice on relationships, parenting, family health, resolving conflict, and coping with stress.
St. Petersburg Therapy has been providing counseling for individuals, couples, and families for over 20 years. In addition, career consulting is also offered for clients of all ages to help identify their ideal career interests through the GS 120 online program. Owner Annette Ryder, LMFT, is nationally known for her expertise in parenting and launching children to college and adulthood. Sessions through telehealth or in person are available at this time. To schedule an appointment, please visit either the Facebook page or website, stpetersburgtherapy.com.
What if you could train your brain to think healthier thoughts? CopeNotes uses daily text messages to help you do exactly that. All you need is a cell phone and a brain. To learn more and try it for yourself, visit www.copenotes.com.
Get an additional 10% off your CopeNotes subscription by mentioning the code SHRINKSCHAT. Don't forget the S, SHRINKS, chat. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to our show. I'm Monica Burton, along with Annette Ryder and Dr. Harold Chinitsky. And we are talking about elite athletes and our mental health.
So we're going to answer that great question one more time, Harold, bring it at us. Let's get it right.
It goes on the concept of third person, first person, second. So I asked my athletes, if something goes well or something doesn't go well, how would a coach that you respect approach you? What would they say to you? So what kind of things would they say? So let me ask either of you, how would a respected individual, you know, that a mentor of yours approach you when something doesn't go the way you want it?
For me, it's what happened.
It asks what happened. So they kind of look for a little analysis. What else would they do?
They want my reflection. What happened? Let's talk about it. Let's think about it. What do you think should have happened? What do you think should be different?
Oh, something different. Forward orientation.
Right.
Monica?
I couldn't help but think about, what do I say to my kids when they're disappointed about a loss in sports? What I usually do is I validate their disappointment or being upset. And then I ask them, what'd you learn so we can do it differently next time?
There you go. So again, there's a normalization that this experience took place. You were obviously invested in what it was. That's why you were doing it. Didn't work out. So there's a sense of disappointment. That's an emotion. How do we move forward? Can I be flexible? Can I learn from it? Oftentimes a coach can be very encouraging. Talk about, listen, we know you got this. Stay the course, be focused. You know, we can make this better. We can learn from it and get, you know, address it in the future. Now take that same advice and now convert it to first person sentences. Be the voice of that respected individual. Mm-hmm. So when you hear this third person approach, what they would say, what do you learn from it? It makes sense that you could feel kind of disappointed. How do we move forward? What's it going to be in the future when this takes place? Third person first. So think about how somebody else would offer it up and convert it to first person.
Yeah. Hey, Annette, what was that like? I was thinking of that little clip. I think last time you were on, we talked about that girl that was going down the ski slope, but now she was going to go down a ski jump and she's going to go down a bigger one. Mm-hmm. And they had the little microphone on and she was saying these things that her coach would say, same technique, longer slope. Mm-hmm. Pull the line, jump off, toes up. She's talking herself through exactly. She's being her own coach to herself in the third person to first person to herself as she's going off the slope. And that's, you know, what honestly, it's not really off of anything else. And this way we can relate to top athletes. This is stuff I kind of say to myself throughout the day. You got this, Annette. It's going to go okay. This might be, it might feel tough right now, but it won't feel tough forever. This is how you create a dialogue that gets you through the harder situations in your life.
Yeah. I can remember doing a live television segment on the news. And as a reporter was asking a question, I was thinking to myself, boy, this would be a really lousy time to just freeze up. At which point then I kind of snapped myself out of it and going, let's see, I've been the mental health correspondent for a number of years. I've been able to handle it in the past. I keep getting asked back. So apparently I'm doing something right. Let me listen to what the question is. I can do a fairly decent job of consolidating an answer and bringing it into some bite-sized morsel. And I was right back into the moment. We have to help individuals get out of their head and get into the moment. There are three ways to waste your energy.
Right.
Wishing the past was different. Well, we can't change it. Worrying about the future. Well, worrying doesn't do anything about the future. As a matter of fact, there are no guarantees. So the only thing you ever do is increase your probability of success. and whining about things outside of your control. You know, I can only control me. I can't control that stuff out there. I can mitigate as much as possible. And so helping individuals to stay in the moment because they can understand these concepts are literally just wasting their energy.
Right. Yeah. That's so, the way that's that four W's there, Harold. Right. Let's just right. Well, no, but then they're wasting.
Oh, they are wasting it. That's right. Oh, you added it. That is the overriding perspective. Right. Well done.
I was the third person there.
And I appreciate that.
I think too, just to kind of bring it back to the listeners who maybe you're a parent and you have a kid who's participating in high school sports like myself, or, you know, maybe you're a coach out there. Not every person on your team is going to be an elite athlete. But I still think some of these principles can apply, as well as if you have a child or if you're a coach, how do you also talk about mental health with these athletes? And, you know, I think some of these principles that we're talking about, we can apply. But do you have any tips for parents out there?
Well, first off, I hope that a parent can provide what I call the four A's of love. You know, if you do these for your child, they will experience it as love. By the way, if you do it with your loved ones, the four A's are attention, affection, acceptance, and approval. Attention: I'm willing to spend time with you doing things you like. I'm willing to spend time with you doing things I like, and I'm willing to spend time with you doing things we like to do together. Attention. Affection: I am verbally and non-verbally, publicly and privately, willing to share with you how special and how much I do care about you. Acceptance: I value you for who you are, what makes you unique. Not everyone is an elite athlete, but giving your best is something very special. And approval. Yeah. So I am willing to support you on your goals, your dreams, your aspirations. So it may not be the Olympics, but it may be, can I work on developing just some skills in it? Can I be a good teammate? Can I get in better shape? Can I learn to give it my all? Can I handle disappointment? Those are all transferable in life.
Right.
And so as a parent of a high school athlete, statistics would indicate that the majority of individuals are not going to go on to play in college. And as we say, only 1 out of 100 in college goes pro. So there's always a conversation of life after sports with your child to talk about what other interests that you have. And that goes back to the balance. I had a tennis player who just contacted me last night that I work with, who was saying, I just finished a major national tournament and some of my friends want to hang out this weekend, but I feel bad, like I should be out practicing. And I emphasized, you need to have a social network. You need to have an opportunity to shut it off, recharge your battery. You need to be able to laugh about things. You need to be able to take a moment on that. But when you come back to practice, 100%. And so it is really important that for skill development of high school and let's say even junior high, the athletes, I mean, we're talking about coordination. We're talking about skill development. We're talking about camaraderie, teamwork, communication. All of those are transferable to successful business people. And so if you can help your child develop those, if they happen to be an elite athlete, we want to help them kind of keep this all in perspective. If this is where you're at in high school and your goal is to play, I'm just going to say professional, everything between here and here is practice. Let's not get distracted by anything. It's not really wins and losses. It's, am I constantly, as an amateur, you have two goals: improve my skills and decrease my errors. That's it. That is it. A lot of people want to make highlight reels, but I'll tell you, these players up here, it's because they improve their skills and they decrease their errors. There are amateurs who are better than pros with skills, but they make too many errors. And mentality, they get overwhelmed and they stress themselves out. There are players who've played far longer than some pros. Look at most golfers on the planet. They hackers on a golf course. That doesn't mean they're going to be a pro. So it's that combination of understanding, I have to increase my skill while decreasing my error. What I always like to ask parents of any kind of junior high, but mostly in the high school ages, I always just ask them, if you think about it, whoever makes the least amount of errors usually wins in the high school level. That also applies to pros, but let's just go to high school.
Right.
And so I asked them, think of all the errors that took place. So it could be on a math test. It could be when you're interviewing, could be in sport. And then identify which error happened most frequently, which one error happened the most often. Mm-hmm. And now address that one error. You will make a world of difference in your performance. Mm-hmm. Any area of a struggle or a challenge can become a strength. You can begin to master it. Too many people, unfortunately, know they have a weakness and avoid it.
Right.
And avoidance gives you short-term relief without any long-term resolution. So I encourage people to acknowledge it, admit it, address it, adjust it, approach it, and adapt. And all of those help people improve in life.
Yeah, they do in all ways. That's why the mental health piece of being an athlete of any kind, you know, amateur for the rest of your life, is still such a great way to kind of have a nonverbal expression of working under stress and pressure and learning how to adjust yourself. So, you know, sometimes I've had clients who, like, they did a lot of very high performance things in their athleticism in high school, but that's not what they're doing in college, right? Mm. Instead, they're trying to become a doctor or a lawyer. But what makes them good at that is having that experience of the sports and knowing, like, listen, 1,000 eyes might be on me right now, but it doesn't matter to me because I've had more than 1,000 eyes on me before and I still did my activity well.
That goes to the three things that don't matter, by the way.
Right.
The name of the event, because that's just a label. It doesn't change the laws of physics. The number of people watching or the person I'm competing against, that doesn't control who I am. And the potential trophy or points I might earn or medal, that's an outcome which I don't control.
Right. Caleb Dresser was talking about how he'd almost rather swim without the golds because
absolutely, but that
they get in the way.
That becomes a distraction. If you have your perception on an outcome, you're not focusing on the process. Monica, you had mentioned, how do we make sure we're also addressing the mental health of our developing athletes? One of the things I always like to do with my athletes, especially if I happen to be working with a team and I'm on the field, I call them micro sessions. So I'll just sit down next to one of the athletes, either at the locker or in the locker room or on the bench. And I'll just kind of reference, you know, hey, was there anything you wanted to be able to talk about? I recall the last time we said this, and it will last maybe 15 seconds. And they know that I've got their back, that I've been paying attention to what they've said, that are kind of concerns of theirs, worries of theirs, issues in their life, because they know I'd rather deal with an issue rather than wait for it to become a problem. So I'll just mention it and say, hey, if you want, touch base with me afterwards, we'll deal with that. So for your children, they need to be validated, as you were saying. You need to legitimate their emotional experience. You need to be able to provide an ear when they have something to talk about. Teaching people diligence and persistence is very helpful, but also being willing to admit, and this is vitally important for the listening audience, all of our prevention programs that we work with young adults start with two factors, always these two. The first one is feelings identification. If I don't know how I emotionally experience the world, I'm more likely to become overwhelmed by it. So we have to teach feelings identification, the full range of different emotions, and understand what those words are. And the second one is communication skills. If I know how I experience the world, but I don't have the ability to communicate it with others, get information, vent, cathart, I'm more likely to become overwhelmed by my emotions. Mm-hmm. And both of those either act out through behavior or act in through anxiety and depression. So helping your young adult, your child, be able to come up with the range of emotions to express how they feel, to express their experience of the world, and then teaching them both verbal and nonverbal communication is a great foundation to prevent later problems.
I completely agree. And I think it goes back to what Annette was even saying at the very beginning. The thing that might make the difference between the 1/100th of a second is how we're learning how to take care of our mental health. Just like you told your tennis player, go laugh with your friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other reason why it needs to be stressed in our society, whether you're an athlete or not. How you take care of your mental health really helps you in more ways than one.
Yeah. We are now becoming aware of it. It used to be we push our athletes to medical, physical ailments someone over practicing and developing spiral fractures on their legs, which is just grotesque, eating disorders for gymnasts or other kind of sports where it's judging external and physique. And that was medical. And so we had to talk to these athletes about how, well, if you're not addressing the medical side, you won't be able to perform. Well, the same now that we're willing to talk about, if you don't address the mental health, you won't be able to perform.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harold, we could just talk to you for the next couple hours, but we all have to go back and get back to our work. We're going to have you back again. We can't thank you enough for coming back and joining us. Our listeners love you. Thank you very much. This has been a really important conversation about mental health and athleticism and what all of those different things mean. And I hope our listeners can take away some of your wonderful little 3-point tips.
Yes, I love it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Harold. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to our show. Don't forget to go to our Facebook and Instagram and like us. And we hope you have a great day.